City Current. Produced by Dakota Media Access. In-depth discussion with Bismarck and Mandan city officials. Watch on Government Access Channel 602 HD or tune in to Radio Access 102.5 FM. Always local, always current.
Welcome to a Bismarck edition of City Current. We're here in the studios at Dakota Media Access on Wednesday, February 26th. I'm Mary Van Sickle. I'm here along with Jason Timonic from the city of Bismarck.
Hi, Mary. How are you today?
I'm pretty good. You had a marathon meeting last night. It was over 3 hours.
We ended just at 9, so just 15 minutes short of a four-hour meeting.
A lot of agenda items to cover. So that means we have a lot to talk about today.
We do.
We're going to get right to
it. We'll talk quickly.
Yeah, we'll try. Nothing on the consent agenda that we thought was of interest. And obviously the commissioners did not pull anything for discussion. So all of those items went through. So moving into the regular agenda right away, the first item was the chamber leadership team wanted to get permission from the city commission to allow the event center staff to help them with a project.
Right.
Yeah.
So every year the chamber has a series of teams that go through their leadership program and they generally look for a project in the community to work towards and see come to fruition. The Art Alley, for example, was one of the projects that's probably most recognizable. The project that was requested last night involves some outdated signage at the event center, particularly on the, I guess it'd be the southwest corner near the main entrance. There's some columns that are out there, and they still say Bismarck Civic Center. Of course, the official name now is the Bismarck Event Center, and the group recognized that and don't have any ideas at this point, but really what they were just looking for is a partnership.
Right.
A willingness by the city to say, yes, this sounds like a good idea. We'll go down this path
together.
So they'll be working with Charlie Jeske, our event center manager. Some unique features about these signs, they're very deep into the ground. So that's why they're still there. They at one time had flagpoles that were on top of the signs, and therefore they've got a pretty good foundation. Pretty costly to remove. So it'd be nice to be able to repurpose them. But the other neat thing is there's electricity to these. The signs are currently lit. So one option is just replace the signage and update it, or kind of branch on that theme that's been developing of more public art in these areas, particularly the Fifth Street corridor, and see if there's an opportunity to
create some kind of landmark or something visually interesting, a little more interesting than what's there. And they did, the representative from the leadership team, they weren't asking for funding at this moment. They're going to do some research on what it could look like and where they could find some money to do this.
They had some really nice examples from other communities, and they kept talking about something that you would walk through or something that would be a part of the entrance. So it, to me, it sounds like it's significant in size and scale. At least that's the concept at this time.
That'd be a nice improvement on Fifth Street. And as I understand, these projects are moving forward pretty quickly, and they'll be, a part of this year's leadership class for the chamber. So they're going to be presented fairly soon. So they'll be hit the ground running on this.
Right. My understanding is the group graduates in May of each year, and the intent is to have the project finalized, not necessarily implemented, but the project concept refined for delivery at the end
of the
time.
Well, it's exciting. It'll be good to see. I am a proud alumni of the Chamber Leadership
class. Good
for you. So, we won't talk about what year that was, but one of the first classes that came through Chamber Leadership, and it's a great program. So, moving on your agenda, also last night, Jeff Heinz from Public Works, along with their individual from Waste Management, gave a report and an update on what's going on with recycling in the community.
Right. And if we think back about a year ago, we heard the term China Sword, which was China's way of responding to a lot of the recycling that was being sent to China. And the concern was that there were too many contaminants, meaning garbage, within the recycling materials. So a big part of the message last night was make sure that you are sorting your recyclables, know what you should be recycling. A term I heard again last night was wish cycling. In other words, you hope it's recyclable, so you put it in the can, but it might end up being garbage.
Yeah.
So our recycling that Waste Management collects all goes to a sorting and collection facility in the Minneapolis area. Unfortunately, though, when plastic bags end up in there, those are contaminants. Those are loads that can't be recycled because the plastic bags get tangled up in the machines. It's a different type of plastic. They can't be recycled the same way some of the other plastics we have are getting done. So the message was the recycling program is great. It's really working. It's saving the lifespan of our landfill, but also to the residents of Bismarck. Please make sure you know what you're putting in your container, that it is recyclable. And if you're not sure, it's probably best to just throw it away.
Yeah, it really slows down the process when there's contamination in there.
Right.
Yeah, either food or water.
Yep, you mentioned or the moisture in the containers. If you leave the lid open and it snows, that snow will eventually turn to water, of course, and then it can cause trouble for the machines down the line.
And compounding this was the issue with China now not taking so much of the recyclables.
Right.
It's created an issue across the country where this stuff is getting backlogged.
Mm-hmm.
But as a reaction to that, as I heard last night, was there's new plans and new developments for more recycling within the country. So some of these things are moving forward in a more positive way. But but generally, there's a lot of people recycling, and that's what we want.
Very positive.
Yeah. Wastewater treatment report was also given last night from Michelle Closey, your water person, your water expert.
Wastewater and wastewater.
Yes. Yep. And she came forward with the consultant that's done the master plan. So this is a master plan looking into the future 20, 30 years.
Right. And we're looking at expansion at the wastewater treatment facility because of the size of our community. We're considered an urban center, and we're held to a different standard than perhaps a smaller community that uses a different treatment system. Of course, here we've got a very complex system of not just chemicals, but also bioengineering as well. We've got a way to break down some of those solid wastes and things along the way.
Mm-hmm.
So they're looking at what does the wastewater treatment plant look like in the future? And there's some new buildings that will be added going forward to help help deal with the increase in population and also the increase of waste. We've got a 25-year population projection that puts us well over 125,000. So that's going to require vast improvements at the wastewater treatment facility to keep up with EPA regulations and just simply the demand that is coming this way.
And I was going to say, too, this report, we're showing a few of the pages that were included in the report, but it's pretty detailed.
Mm-hmm.
And it really talks, too, about some of the regulations and how they're always evolving and changing and how we're keeping up with that. I mean, all of this ends up in the Missouri River.
Ultimately.
And we're here at the top end of that river.
Mm-hmm.
And everything that's coming behind that or along with our flow is being affected by what's coming into the Gulf of Mexico.
Right.
So that's really monitored very heavily, and we have to keep up with those regulations as well as the growth.
Right.
Yeah, and the demand that we have.
That was part of the discussion last night, is ultimately this does end up in the Gulf of Mexico. And it's not just human waste. We're also talking about agricultural impacts with nitrogen and things that are being used as fertilizer. All of that works its way into the water system and ultimately ends up in the Gulf of Mexico.
And it was, again, interesting report because there were maps that showed those flows in across the country or down into the Gulf. So that was really interesting. The picture that we have up there right now really shows some of the future. The white buildings are all existing buildings.
Right.
Those buildings that are shown in blue would be needed to be constructed over the next 10 years, maybe 15 years,
something
like that.
Some of them are even a little closer. If you
some
look on the south end of the water or wastewater treatment plant, there's a building indicated that's the new dewatering process. That's something that they're working on right now, and its name really says it all. It's removing the moisture from the solids and then treating the water and then dealing with the solids in a different way.
And the department's already buying equipment to help this move this forward, and then the building will need to be constructed to make that happen.
Exactly.
And isn't that all somewhat related to the disposal of these solid wastes as well?
It is.
This is really changing as well.
Yes. Yeah. In years past, it was pretty common to see the solid side of the waste being spread across agricultural fields. And what we've learned over the years is finding those fields in close proximity to the city is getting more and more challenging, which adds to the cost of disposal. So if we can deal with that waste in a different way, it's more efficient for the plant and a cheaper impact on everybody when it comes to the utility rates.
I think Michelle explained that this process has taken over a couple of years to get this master plan in place. So it looks like a good plan to go forward, and commissioners approved it unanimously to move it forward.
Absolutely.
But we'll see it come back in pieces, I'm sure, as it progresses.
Yep.
Okay. Also, last night was a report from the Human Relations Committee. It was mm-hmm. a fairly brief report. They just basically gave an update of what they've been working on. But this is a committee that's been established for a few years. Mm-hmm. They just recently changed their mission statement. So right. we talked about that earlier. Mm-hmm. But you had a report, little capsulized version of what they have been doing the last year.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. And the Human Relations Committee is also still two people short of a full committee. So there are nine people that can serve on this committee. We're looking for applicants. So if anybody's interested, you can find information on our website or certainly call city administration. Our office is the primary office that helps support the Human Relations Committee. We staff okay. that and help prepare the agendas and attend the meetings and do those things. But no, it's definitely a great group. They're out there to try and make sure everybody has an equal opportunity in this community and supporting diversity and inclusion and, quite frankly, education of mm-hmm. all of those things that go along with
yeah.
it. So good for them for doing the right stuff.
So we'll move into some of the bigger items last night, or the items that took the most time. And mm-hmm. the first one, a public hearing.
Yep.
So there was testimony, which adds to the length of the item. This is something that was discussed at the last meeting, future land use plan amendment mm-hmm. and a rezoning in the Tyler Cooley area.
Right.
So very interesting project, very big project for the community. And the commission moved forward on it last night, did approve it. Mm-hmm. Commissioner Oban did not vote in favor of it, but all other commissioners did. So right. it will move forward.
Correct.
To the next steps.
Yep. And the ask last night was not for approval of a subdivision plat or the layout of the neighborhood or anything like that. It was simply changing the land use designation from conservation to residential, and then also the zoning to mm-hmm. support single family and single and two family zoning. In
okay.
this area. So I know we've talked about this in the past. We've talked about land use planning, and our land use plan is meant to be a very high level. We just don't have the capability of getting into that development level detail of exploring some of these green fields. If we were to try and do it to that level of scrutiny, boy, we wouldn't be able to plan for much going forward because the sheer size and directions in which we're growing as a community. We know we've got some challenging areas with topography and some of the geology that goes along with this, but that was part of the work that the consultant had to do to show that the areas they are proposing for development are stable, are appropriate based mm-hmm. on soils and geology in the area. We heard from some neighbors that have concerns.
Right.
I guess two primary concerns. Number one, switching the conservation land over to developable land, which could have an impact on viewshed, wildlife. You know, obviously there's going to be more rooftops in those areas. The other piece that was raised, and we've heard this before, is some concerns with Tyler Parkway, making that connection to the north and south. And the mm-hmm. folks that live along Tyler Parkway have concerns that will become a major thoroughfare for traffic north and south.
And it seems like their comments kind of focused on a difference of opinion on what a land use plan, the detail and the
correct.
The permanence of that plan. And we've been contacted, you and I were contacted with some of those comments after mm-hmm. our last time together. Mm-hmm. And that's interesting. It is interesting, and they certainly a right to disagree with that opinion, but mm-hmm. it's also an issue that we talk about with the city of Mandan as well. When they're looking, their land use plan is considered pretty much the same way.
Mm-hmm.
It's a high level view of what could be mm-hmm. and what might be ideal for that land. But I think Commissioner Guy brought up a good point last night as well, is that this is not public land.
Right.
This is privately owned. And how far do you go to dictate to mm-hmm. private ownership of a property and where it can be developed.
And
what we're talking about in this map, and maybe Josh could pop the map back up, is a modification of that open space.
Right.
Not a complete...
Not a complete abolition of it
right,
by any means. More
right.
of a condensing mm-hmm. of that that green space through there. And again, that comes forward when developers and engineers are looking at the spaces that could support development, mm-hmm. whether it be through utilities, roadway connections, or as we mentioned before, steep slopes and geology. So there's a lot more research that needs to happen before
yeah.
we can define it specifically. The land use plan is intended to be a guiding document. It is not intended to be the end all be all. This mm-hmm. is the only answer we'll ever have.
Well, and you talk about the connection of Tyler Parkway eventually. And that sounds good, but it's got some challenges
Absolutely.
In its way. I mean, the slope in there is yep. pretty extreme. So
there was a gentleman that mentioned it last night that it's going to take either a significant box culvert or quite possibly even a bridge to make that next extension to the north mm-hmm. across the Tyler Cooley.
Yeah.
So these aren't small projects. These aren't things that we take lightly. But until we have that chance to really dig into it at the detailed level, a lot of it is conceptual.
And again, I think it was Commissioner Guy who asked the question about slope and erosion mm-hmm. in that area, and that a study has been done.
Mm-hmm.
So staff was satisfied with the results of that study that
Correct.
What is being proposed, at least to this point,
mm-hmm.
is acceptable and it can work within this area. But as you said, the next step is platting.
Right.
And that'll come back to the city in that form.
Through the Planning and Zoning
right.
Commission. And
right.
I don't have a timeline for that, but my anticipation is that will follow soon.
Okay.
So this was the initial request was to modify the land use plan and then the zoning change. Rather mm-hmm. than go through the extensive process of laying out those lots and utilities and easements and all of those things, the first question from the developer was, will the city support the zoning change, yes or no? And
yeah.
the answer last night was, yes, the zoning change is supported. Now they have the next phase of development, and that's putting lines on paper and seeing how it can really fit together.
Yeah. Okay. Will it come back to the commission then?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. It'll
follow
the same process any other new subdivision does, where it gets considered and heard by the Planning and Zoning Commission. They make a recommendation to City Commission, and then the commission will have another public hearing and a chance to go through that
All
as
right.
well.
Sounds good. Well, talk about it again.
I'm sure we will.
Another lengthy public hearing last night had to do with street improvement districts.
Mm-hmm.
Usually that's a pretty slam dunk, move it forward. And Linda Olster from your departments talks about the process that those mm-hmm. assessments have gone through. You've identified those roads to be improved.
Mm-hmm.
The notice goes out to the neighborhood or any affected property owners.
Right.
They have so much time to protest.
Mm-hmm.
And then she comes back and reports on how that when it all happened and how many were protested out,
right.
blah, 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 and not one out of these two big projects.
Right.
We're talking about road, not reconstruction, it's mill and overlay.
Right.
Primarily?
Significant maintenance, mill
okay.
and overlay, and in some cases, they call it full depth reconstruction. So they have to take it all the way down to the subsurface and, mm-hmm. and rebuild that. So these are some pretty significant roadways, particularly South Washington Street from Expressway down to the Burley drainage ditch. There was a section of Divide Avenue from, I believe, 19th Street all the way over to Volk Drive, so that area around Sleepy Hollow Park.
Okay.
These are areas, of course, we're not just throwing a dart at a map and trying to figure out where to fix streets. We have a very specific process that we go through.
To evaluate the condition of the roads.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And part of what's done is there's a system to, in many ways, x-ray the pavement surface, but also just on our own maintenance records. Our Roads and Streets division within Public Works is out patching and potholing and things, even right now, as potholes start to emerge. When you couple those two things together, it becomes very apparent where we need to focus our attention for street maintenance.
Mm-hmm.
And last night, we had some pretty significant districts. And as you said, this is typically part of the process. Really, what they were asking for is to determine if the necessity was met. And the way you balance that is through the protests of the property owners that are in those districts and whether or not the funds are available.
And neither of these districts were protested out. In fact,
Correct.
The highest, I think you said, were like 15% of property
Right.
owners in one situation
Right. and,
protested.
And keep in mind, we've got two major street improvement districts, but there were many sub-projects within those areas.
Okay.
So I think there were 8 or 9 different neighborhoods that were scheduled for
Sure.
some type of annual maintenance this year, significant maintenance. After the vote was all said and done, nothing's moving forward.
It was voted down.
Correct.
3-2.
Exactly.
Again, kind of, I had to kind of snap my head back and go, what just happened? Because I had not seen that happen before, unless it was protested out, which
Correct.
Would be obvious. But I had not seen that happen. So I didn't quite understand I didn't know if I heard that correctly. So what do we do from this point? What happens now?
Well, what's next is, at this point, none of these projects are moving forward. So in other words, there won't be significant street rehabilitation projects done unless something changes
mm-hmm.
in the immediate future. We will continue to do the regular maintenance. As I mentioned, our Roads and Streets Division will go out and fill potholes and do some of those things. But a milling overlay or a full-depth reconstruction won't be happening in any of these neighborhoods this year.
So you have already identified the summer of 2021, mm-hmm. those projects. So does that push everything back from this point, or double everybody up? And
it has that potential. Internally, we're still discussing what are the ramifications of this decision made by the commission last night.
And I understand, and we've talked about this before, and this was an issue of the last legislative session, that special assessments, you want to explore mm-hmm. alternatives to special assessments.
Right.
And it's still being worked on. It's mm-hmm. not off the table, but it's not an easy thing to do. What
right.
do you do with all the specials that are in place? How mm-hmm. do you put a utility tax on top of that where people are paying those off?
Mm-hmm.
It's very complicated.
Right.
So it's still being worked on. So I get it that this is in a state of flux, but mm-hmm. this kind of throws it off a little bit.
It definitely changes the direction for
yeah.
staff. There was
yeah.
a lot of work that was done to this point to get ready, and there would have been much more work coming later, not just with the contractors that were hired to do the work, but also our teams of people that would be out inspecting and working with those contractors. So
the rhythm has been interrupted on this, and again, manageable, I'm sure you
mm-hmm.
guys can react to
we'll
that.
We'll adapt.
Just,
we
yeah.
certainly will. We're not just going to sit around and
mm-hmm.
do nothing. We obviously have many things that can be happening
sure.
in instead of this.
Yeah.
But this is different for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Well, is it going to come back, or does it wait a year? Or
I guess it's up to the commission to decide
sure.
how to move forward.
Okay.
We'll see in a couple of weeks when we meet again and talk about it
okay.
again.
Okay.
For now,
right.
it's
a change.
It's different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Shifting. Okay, we'll move on to a couple of Renaissance Zones projects that
mm-hmm.
are kind of exciting, really. It kind of checks some boxes for the downtown plan and something that people have been looking for. And there is other residential projects that we know of that mm-hmm. are also moving forward, but these are two big ones.
Right. And they're
and
noticeable.
Very noticeable. And I will just say that for images, since we've had a lot already today, I did not put the map in where this
mm-hmm.
is located, but let's just say it is in the downtown area, just across the street to the north of the federal building. So
right.
we're on Avenue A
mm-hmm.
between 3rd and 2nd.
Right. And then also
and then
just
a little bit west of 2nd. Across
there's,
the street.
There's actually
yeah.
two different projects here. The west
yeah.
project is what we're looking at on the screen right now. It's a series of three-story apartment buildings with some garages attached. They're very handsome design.
Yeah.
This will eliminate a few homes that are in the area. These are older homes that were purchased with the intent of being able to expand the footprint of a future project, which is the project we're looking at today. So there's,
it's
how
ambitious.
Many units is it?
Yeah,
23 units on
yeah.
the west side. And then when you jump to the east side of 2nd Street, that whole half block between 2nd and 3rd Street, I want to say there's almost 96, 97
oh,
units
the big
in, the,
one. Yeah.
in the bigger building.
Well, this one's, this is the bigger one. And this
mm-hmm.
is, this will be the, well, now we're back to the other
Sorry,
one.
Josh.
That's all right. Sorry, Josh, we're confusing you. This is called The Grove.
Mm-hmm.
And this has 23 units. And this project, as well as the other one, as we know now, are apartments. These are rental properties.
Right.
Okay. This is very attractive.
Mm-hmm.
Looks kind of, you know, kind
nice,
of a nice fit.
Nice
the
blend with the neighborhood.
Yeah.
Obviously, you've got some historic homes in this area that have been around for a long time, and these are very complementary to that. They're not going to stand out as a different feature. Obviously, they'll
yeah.
stand out because they're new, but I think the architectural design is appropriate.
Yeah. It's really cool. And the image we're looking at now does show garages, and as you understood, we don't know 100%, but as you understand right now, it looks like every unit may have a garage.
I believe so.
But the next project, which is the larger of the two, again called Renaissance Lofts,
mm-hmm.
this is 67 units, four stories high. We assume that the parking is underneath.
Correct.
But the number of parking spots is outside of the downtown requirements.
Right.
So we are going to see this item on the Board of Adjustment on Thursday night.
Correct.
Being discussed.
Board of Adjustment meets at 5. And so what the developers are requesting is a variance from the minimum parking standards. Right now we have a formula that determines how many parking spaces each apartment building has, and it's essentially based on the number of bedrooms in the entire building. Oh. So in this case, they have a limited footprint. They know what amount of land they own. I think it's around 23 to 25,000 square feet. When you see downtown development, you really want to see it going almost border to border on properties. You don't see a lot of yards and a lot of open spaces in downtown, and this fits with that urban character.
Yeah.
With that, though, they have to figure out creative ways to integrate parking, and they're doing it by including it in the building. Given that, there is only a certain number of spaces that they can offer. So they're requesting some leniency from the parking requirements, and this is right ahead of the city's planning and, the community development department. They're working on a rewrite of the parking ordinance. So I suspect that will be part of the conversation at the Board of Adjustment meeting on Thursday, is that if we're looking at the existing calculations, this is the number, but if we look at the proposed changes, those numbers are being relaxed in some ways. There's a perception that if people are living downtown, they may not need a vehicle in all cases. And so if you've got somebody that's looking for a walkable neighborhood so they can walk to their job or walk to entertainment and dining and things like that, we're in the perfect spot to do that. Mm-hmm. And the intent is to know that not everyone that lives there may drive a vehicle.
Well, correct. And we've had, you know, certainly have Bisman Transit in place, Taxi 9000, and now Uber and Lyft moving around the community does make a difference. So they will be at the Board of Adjustment on Thursday night looking for a variance. So this is 67 units, lots of residential moving in. It's great. Now, if this all goes through, and do we anticipate this could start as early as this summer?
I believe so. And I believe they're starting on the west side first.
Okay.
So the
demolition of a couple
homes will happen. There will have to be quite a bit of earth moving that'll go on, but I think we'll see construction moving forward. I think it is worth mentioning, since we did start this conversation saying they were Renaissance Zone projects, again, just for anybody that is curious, the Renaissance Zone requires a certain level of investment. In other words, for new construction, I believe it's a minimum of $150 a square foot for the buildings. And then the benefit of being in the Renaissance Zone for the owners is that there will be a five-year property tax exemption and then also a five-year state business income tax exemption on all the money that they would collect as the landlord. So to finish that story, there are some incentives to developing downtown, but we know we can show it with the data. We've done this. The return on that investment is just a few years before what they didn't pay in taxes for those 5 years is quickly recouped, because once the exemptions are over, we do a full assessment and put a full value on those projects, and then they pay the market rate for property tax.
Yeah.
And we know that's about 2.5 to 3 years worth of tax collection to offset the 5 years they weren't paying taxes.
It's a big project.
It is.
It's going to change the complexion over there
a bit. It does, yeah.
And exciting.
And it checks the box with infill and redevelopment. Of course, that's something we've talked about for a couple of years now. Community development is very encouraging of infill and redevelopment, because from an efficiency perspective, it's great for the city. We're not adding new roads. We're not adding new water and sewer. We're not adding anything else for maintenance other than what's already there.
Right.
We're just simply creating a higher taxable value on land that, quite frankly, today is a gravel parking lot.
Yeah.
With a very low value and a very low tax liability as well. So even though they own the land, they're not paying much for it in taxes because it's a gravel parking lot.
Yeah, yeah. So if they get over the hurdle on Thursday, then we could possibly see this moving forward
real
quick.
That would be the last step in their approval. I shouldn't say the last step. This project goes to the state, to the Department of Commerce for review, as all Renaissance Zone projects in the state do. The state of North Dakota looks at it as well to make sure it checks the boxes of their program.
Sounds good. Well, we're getting the signal that we're already a little long, but we can keep talking. Just a couple more items. 43rd Avenue Engineering Services. And this is, we've talked about 43rd Avenue, and we know that project's moving forward. It's already, you know, it's on a fast track.
There's equipment parked at Washington and 43rd that will start as soon as the ground is thawed.
There you go. So, but we're not talking about that area. We're talking about 43rd Avenue East to 26th Street.
Right, from State
from
Street.
From State Street,
So the plan for this year is to improve 43rd between Mapleton, or essentially Washington Street, all the way to State Street. This would be the next mile east.
Yeah.
So this is the first step to engage with design professionals to help us determine what that final grade of the roadway looks like.
And this project was originally scheduled for 2024, mm-hmm. right around that area. But Gabe's idea is to move this forward, get ready for it now.
Right.
Should funding become available, they'll be ready to go. Mm-hmm. That particular intersection, as everybody knows, I mean, it's just built and built and built, and it's gotten busier and busier. And then the Schilling Building certainly has added to that area up there, and it needs some attention. So to get it into 26th Street seems to make some sense. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it has not yet been determined if this would in fact be a potential funding source, but this corridor of 43rd Avenue is part of that list of roadways that was identified for the additional half-cent sales tax to help offset those construction costs. So the commission will need to make that decision on the priority of things, but having those plans and specifications in place will help educate them when it comes to making that final call.
Sounds good. South Meadows Stormwater Ponds. Mm-hmm. I was kind of like, my DVR was like exploded by then and said, that's enough time for this meeting. And I didn't really get too much information on this. Sure. Can you kind of explain what
is
happening there?
South Meadows, so that's the subdivision that would be in the southwest quadrant of the intersection at Washington and Burley Avenue.
Okay. So
very south end of Bismarck. In that area, stormwater is a challenge in some cases because it is primarily flat. The other concern is that given the proximity to the airport, if you're within 10,000 feet of the airport's operational area, you cannot hold stormwater for more than 48 hours. In other words, if you capture stormwater, you've got to drain it out of the system, or it's got to percolate and infiltrate into the ground. And the primary reason is because it becomes a wildlife attractant.
Wetlands,
birds, airplanes, they don't mix.
I knew there was a reason.
That's
a good reason.
Yes. So what's been happening is the developer that constructed the neighborhood and constructed these ponds has struggled to get sufficient ground cover in these ponds. In other words, weeds are growing and desirable grasses just simply aren't taking root.
Okay.
And we need the developer to work on getting a sufficient ground cover so we can maintain erosion, but also just simply keep noxious weeds at bay. So the commission chose to, typically we would accept these ponds after the developers have completed them, they've been inspected, they're sufficient. City says, yes, we'll take these on as our responsibility. The commission isn't ready to do that yet because there isn't sufficient ground cover. So the developer will need to go back and work with a landscaper, I would assume, and figure out the right way to get appropriate ground cover in that place. And then when it looks good to us, we'll gladly take
it
over from there.
And that was the message from the commissioners last night. No, we won't accept this until it's ready to go.
If we were to accept it in the current condition, then it would become a burden for the stormwater utility to have to pay for those improvements to get the ground cover to establish.
Okay.
So.
Got it.
This isn't uncommon. We do this typically. We just want to make sure that what we accept is in good condition and we can take care of it going forward.
Okay. And the last item on your agenda, or close to your last item, was a discussion on establishing a public arts policy, something that's been floating around for quite a long time. Yeah. So it's nice to see it finally get on the agenda. Mm-hmm. And what was the discussion last night then?
Well, really, it was Commissioner Oban requested to have this on the agenda. And this has been an established goal in our strategic plan. And we talk about our strategic plan a lot. But later in 19, we prioritized the 30 different goals that are in the plan. And we selected a half dozen or so to raise up and focus our attention on first. The public arts policy wasn't in that short list. This conversation will encourage that to move up in the list quite a bit. And so what staff was directed to do was to come back at the next meeting with all the work that's been done over the last 10 plus years, and then also to bring forward the Dakota West Arts Council call for projects submission that we got last year as part of the strategic plan. And that call for projects shined a light on the need for an arts and cultural plan for our community.
Yeah. So all those things combined with all the recent additions with public art, and also some of the controversy surrounding public art, not only in Bismarck and in Mandan too, with the Lonesome Dove mural and certainly the Greta Thunberg photograph on the side of Brick Oven Bakery that was proposed there and did not go there. So all of those things circling around, I think, have really elevated the need to get this done, as well as the Chamber's leadership project.
Exactly.
They're looking at putting in a piece, a landmark, a sculpture, whatever it ends up being. It hopefully it will comply with any kind of policy that we can put in place, it's going to help guide that as the future.
Yeah.
So that's good to see that going forward.
It is.
So where does it go from here?
Well, we'll take all the information we can to the commission in 2 weeks, and then we'll seek direction from them. We could go down the path with a third-party consultant that helps facilitate that effort. In other words, coordinate with the stakeholder groups, provide examples of what other communities have done, and just lay out some steps for us. The other alternative would be to do it, try and do it in-house with the teams that we have. Certainly our community development department would be a good resource for us, since they're looking at downtown design review, not necessarily, they're looking at signs, but not the content of the sign. That's not something that a community or a city can weigh in on. It's the size, shape, and location, First Amendment rights and things like that. But I guess we'll see what the commission really wants to do with it in a couple of weeks. So we've got our marching orders. Okay. We'll do our homework and come back with a report, and then we'll see where the three votes take us.
All right. Well, we covered a lot of the highlights last night, but there were other things like sidewalks and annexations and a lot of things that we missed.
Yeah.
But we did our best today, Jason.
Good job.
Thank you. We'll see you in a couple of weeks.
I'll be here.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Mary.
And thank you for tuning in to this edition of City Current.
For more information on what was discussed in this episode of City Current, visit bismarcknd.gov or call 701-355-1300. If you have suggestions, comments, or issues you would like addressed in future episodes, contact us at info@freetv.org. This program airs on Government Access, Channel 2 and 602 in HD, or on Radio Access 102.5 FM. It's also available as a podcast on radioaccess.org and as a video viewing link at freetv.org. Thanks for tuning in to this edition of City Current.